the rooster for your morning. All the news you need to know. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Well, good morning. This is the WABC Early News. It's Tuesday morning, September 21st. I'm Frank Morano.
Hi, Frankie. How are you?
I'm great.
I actually had some almond butter on toast, and now my mouth is like... So hopefully I'll be able to get through this weather forecast for you today from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. We are looking at some clouds and sun, mix of both this morning, and then the clouds start to really roll in this afternoon. We're going to get up to a high of about 76. The clouds will stick around overnight. We're only going to go down to about 69 degrees, and tomorrow we're going to head up back up to 79 degrees, and the humidity is going to be off the charts, like 80% humidity tomorrow. We'll have cloudy skies tomorrow as well. Basically, what's happening here, the clouds are rolling in because we're going to have some rain by Wednesday night. So by tomorrow night, we're going to have considerable cloudiness, but probably some rain showers overnight. As we head into Thursday, we will start to see scattered thunderstorms in the morning. They'll become more widespread in the afternoon and continue through the evening. It'll clear up probably overnight at some point, but then the showers come back on Friday. The showers come back on Saturday. Ay, ay, ay. Sunday, however, is looking pretty nice. We're looking at about 73 degrees and mostly sunny skies. And we need that because that's when we're doing our big walk, the Tunnel to Towers walk. So I'm really hoping it's going to stay nice on Sunday. I can deal with the Friday and Saturday raininess, occasional rain showers, just as long as we have a nice day for Sunday.
Amen. That is so important.
66 right now in New York City.
More charges are expected in the investigation of former President Trump's company and its finances. The chief financial officer for the Trump Organization made his first court appearance yesterday after being arrested in July for alleged tax fraud. Alan Weiselberg's lawyer asked for more time to review new evidence handed over. He feels indictments are coming against other people. The trial is slated to begin next summer.
Well, speaking of summer, the heat is on down in Florida, and I am not talking about the weather. FBI agents shouting search warrant raided the home of Brian Laundrie's parents. He is, of course, the boyfriend of Gabby Petito, who disappeared earlier this month on a camping trip with him. Her body was found Sunday out west. Laundrie has, as you know, refused to cooperate with police and has since disappeared. Footage from yesterday's raid shows, it was pretty stunning stuff, shows authorities swarming the Laundrie's home before going inside and taking Chris and Roberta Laundrie, the parents, out of the house and into a nearby police van. The area was then cordoned off and declared a crime scene. Meantime, forensic experts have been poring over Gabby's computer hard drive. I guess they got that computer from the house. It was with her boyfriend when he returned to Florida without her on September 1st. And it's interesting because it's starting to appear likely that authorities got a little help from Gabby's online friends, most who probably had never even met her. Experts say social media amateur private eyes started scouring their own pictures and their own videos, and that may have led authorities to her remains. For instance, two YouTubers went back to check out their own videos and pictures from their trip to the Bridger-Teton National Forest. That's where she was. And they found footage that matched the van that Gabby and Laundrie were traveling in. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that that's what led police to that area where they found her body. And it's also not out of the realm of possibility that they are going to get more information from people who were in that area, who were using those cell phones. You know, those cell phones, all that video, we always yell about it, but they can do some good for sure.
And on the Gabby Petito front, a National Parks ranger who talked with Gabby during a domestic dispute with her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, in Utah last month, says their relationship seemed toxic. Melissa Hulls was one of the officers who responded to a 911 call on August 12th about a man slapping a woman in the face at a national park. Hulls told the Desert News she talked with Petito and asked her if she was happy in her relationship and that it could be time for her to find another path. No charges were filed, and the incident was classified by police as a mental emotional health break.
Well, we don't need any health breaks from our guy with Traffic on the Sevens, Joe Nolan. He just makes our day so much better.
Oh, thank you. That's very, very, very nice.
It's very true. We always love talking to you.
Oh, good. Well, I don't know about today, though, because it's going to be a lot of traffic around.
Oh, yeah.
We have full closures, frozen zones all day long as you begin to travel around. And they can happen and pop up just about anywhere, not just with the U.N. General Assembly, but the President of the United States is going to be in town, I believe. So as a result, you're going to have all kinds of closures, frozen zones, and full closures. Avoid the east side, 3-4 to 5-2, east to 6th, again, the General Assembly. Now, we also are going to have a couple of other things you want to know about. First of all, the New Jersey Turnpike, as you travel northbound, the outer roadway is shut down. That for the ongoing construction. Then police activity apparently coming inbound now at the Lincoln Tunnel. One lane going to be out. Mass transit looks to be pretty good, at least so far. An alternate side of the street parking rules and regulations again today are going to be in effect. I'm Joe Nolan with traffic on Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Thank you very much. Yeah. On to some COVID news. Pfizer is standing by its vaccine when it comes to children. The company announced Monday that the shot induced a, quote, robust immune response for kids between the ages of 5 and 11. So the next step is the pharma giant is going to head to the FDA in hopes that the agency will okay emergency use this month. So potentially, kids between the ages of 5 and 11 could get their jabs by Halloween if their parents want to do that. The question is, will parents want to do that? Will they go for it? Kids haven't fared as well of late because of the Delta variant, but still, children make up less than 0.1% of all COVID deaths in the U.S., so we're going to have to wait and see what happens with that. What do you think about that, Frank?
Well, look, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I think it's clearly the risk of COVID seems to be much more prevalent with adults than it does children, but we'll see with this Delta variant how the mutations fare and how kids are affected by it. But speaking of COVID, New York City's largest teachers union isn't happy with Mayor Bill de Blasio's latest tweak to coronavirus policies in schools. It comes after the mayor announced schools will reinstate random coronavirus testing at every school building, which starts next week. Meantime, unvaccinated students will not need to quarantine if there's a positive case in the classroom, as long as they were masked up and maintained a distance of 3 feet. UFT President Michael Mulgrew says he's happy to see the testing increase, but strongly disagrees with the latest quarantine policies, calling it an ill-considered decision.
Staying with the COVID topic, a restaurant owner in Texas is getting a lot of flack, and I can certainly understand why. He kicked a family out of his restaurant because they were wearing masks. The Westers, which is the family, they say that they went to grab some food at Hang Time Restaurant with their four-month-old. Both parents are vaccinated, but they wear masks indoors because their baby is immunocompromised. This is a four-month-old baby who's immunocompromised. The family says that they were told to take their masks off by a waitress who said that she was speaking on behalf of the owner. And the owner, Tom, admitted it's true, but he is defending himself. He's saying that he has spent his money, blood, sweat, and tears on the business, and he doesn't want masks.
Well, I don't understand why he cares if somebody wants to wear a mask.
Because he's making it political.
Yeah, it's silly.
That's cruel. Yeah. It's flat out cruel.
Speaking of Texas, a Texas doctor who violated the state's new abortion law is being sued. He admitted to helping a woman end her pregnancy after the six-week ban. This comes as a new poll from Monmouth University shows 54% of people are against the law. They don't agree with the Supreme Court allowing it to continue, while 39% do agree. About 62% also say the 1973 Roe versus Wade decision should be left alone.
There is no love lost between former President Trump and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell these days. Trump reportedly has been actively recruiting or trying to recruit Senate Republicans to oust McConnell. But insiders say it's not going to happen. In fact, the response has been tepid, to say the least. Experts say McConnell is well respected among his peers and is known for putting the party above the person. In fact, one GOP senator compared Trump's odds of an ouster to a donkey learning to fly.
Well, speaking of former President Trump, a bombshell new book that recounts how the nation's top general worried President Trump's actions might spark a war with China during his last months in office is out today. The revelations about Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley and much more are contained in the new book by veteran journalist Bob Woodward and Robert Costa from The Washington Post. Peril details how Trump's rhetoric about China turned increasingly hostile during the COVID pandemic and how Milley reportedly feared that China might lash out if it felt threatened by a vengeful and unpredictable president. It also alleges Milley secretly took steps to make sure Trump wouldn't be able to launch a nuclear attack as he was preparing to leave the White House. As for the former president's reaction to the new book, he and his allies have been calling Milley's actions treasonous, if true.
Well, a new book is throwing shade in the direction of the former president's personal lawyer and our WABC colleague. And it just so happens that this book is the same book that you were just talking about, Peril, by Bob Woodward and Robert Costa. It claims South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham and Mike Lee of Utah reviewed President Trump's claims of voter fraud in the 2020 election personally and found them less than convincing. These were claims that were brought to them by allegedly Rudy Giuliani. In fact, the term was third grade. And it also claims that Graham's lawyer couldn't corroborate any of the claims that Trump was making, condemning the allegations as sloppy with a, quote, overbearing tone of certainty and, quote, inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, you can bet Mayor Giuliani's going to have quite a bit to say about that at 3 p.m. this afternoon. I know I'll be listening. Two Japanese sisters are being recognized as the world's oldest living identical twins. Guinness World Records is recognizing Umino Sumiyama and Kumi Kadama for the feat. The pair was born on November 5th, 1913, making them both 107 years old. The sisters were mailed their record certificates because of the COVID pandemic, but care workers for Sumiyama say she was in tears when she was presented with the certificate.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. No details on how they have lived so long.
No, I mean, I guess something like, to be said for good genes, right?
Bury the lead, though. We need to know. What do they do?
I mean, what are they going to say? Does anybody really know why they live so long?
You know, I mean, whenever you hear these stories, you always hear people say, it's always the people who say, I drank and I smoked my entire life. You know, it's like, it's always those people.
80% of this stuff is genetic. 80%.
Yeah, 100%. You're right. There is another disturbing photo of Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in blackface. It has reared its ugly head. And it just so happens it surfaced on the eve of the national election. That's the one in which he is hoping to hold power. Here's the thing. This is the third photo to surface since 2019, and each of them was from the same event. It was an Arabian Nights themed party dating back to 2001, and it shows him in various poses wearing a turban and dark makeup. Clearly someone has had these photos, and they just hold on to them until the 11th hour. Canada Proud is this grassroots group supporting his challenger, Aaron O'Toole. They posted the photo with the caption, "It's time to end this national embarrassment. Only Aaron O'Toole can stop Justin Trudeau." Trudeau, for his part, has apologized ad nauseum, saying, "The buck stops with me."
All right.
This seems a little bit of a low blow, but typical politics.
And clearly it didn't have enough of an effect in the election because it looks like Trudeau's Liberal Party will maintain the majority and he'll have enough seats in all likelihood to form a government. So 5:15, let's get a look at sports with Matt Sapienza.
Thanks, Frank, and good morning, everyone. Here's what's going on in the world of sports. Gary Sanchez rebounded from poor defensive play with a go-ahead home run. Four pitchers combined for scoreless relief, and the Yankees gained in the AL wildcard race with a 4-3 victory over the Texas Rangers. Sanchez put the Yankees ahead in the second inning against rookie A.J. Alexi with his 22nd home run. The Yankees built a 4-0 lead before the Rangers closed the gap in a 3-run fifth against Nestor Cortez. New York moved within a half game of Toronto for the second AL wild card, and with 11 games left, is two back of Boston, the league's wild card leader. The Yankees had lost 15 of 22 following a 13-game winning streak. To Green Bay for some Monday Night Football action, Aaron Jones caught three of Aaron Rodgers' four touchdown passes and rushed for a fourth score, and the Green Bay Packers had a welcome return to normal after an embarrassing opening week loss. The Packers beat the Detroit Lions 35-17. Green Bay won its ninth straight home opener. The Packers got thumped 38-3 by New Orleans in week one. Against Detroit, the Packers looked more like the team that went 13-3 in each of Coach Matt LaFleur's first two seasons. Rodgers went 22 of 27 for 255 yards and surpassed John Elway for the 10th all-time in passing yards. The Lions blew a 17-14 halftime lead and fell to 0-2. With sports at 15 and 45, I'm Matt Sapienza. Back to you guys.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you indeed. 517. Let's have a look at traffic and transit on the 7s with Joe Nolan.
And good morning, Frank. Good morning, Juliet. We're really actually off to a pretty good start. We were yesterday, too, but it turned into a mess later in the day, so I'm not optimistic. If you're on the northbound Van Wyck at College Point Boulevard, there's an accident in the left lane. You're backed up from the LIE. And again, don't forget full closures, frozen zones, anytime, anywhere in Manhattan. Avoid just generally the east side from 3-4 to 5-2 east of 6. The General Assembly, of course, is today. We have an accident now northbound on the Van Wyck coming up to College Point Boulevard. An accident, that one going to be in the left lane. Mass Transit looks good. Alternate side is suspended, and this report is sponsored by Ensure Max Protein. Get great-tasting Ensure Max Protein with 30 grams of protein, 1 gram of sugar, and nutrients supports immune health. Those who tried Ensure Protein reported feeling more energy in just 2 weeks. For more information, including consumer survey details, visit Ensure.com. I'm Joe Nolan, traffic on the 7s, Talk Radio 77, WABC.
Thank you very much, Joseph. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, after Deb's headlines, we have On This Day. Plus, we have your Jet Set Juliet travel update. Wow, we had some huge news breaking. I got to tell you. I think someone was listening to me because that travel ban that's been in place for more than 550 days that I was lamenting about all weekend and yesterday, gone. Also, I'm going to tell you about places that you can travel headache free because these are countries with minimal COVID rates. That's coming up in Jet Set at 540. And in Frank's Biz Buzz,
I will be telling you why you can be expecting to spend a little bit more when you send a package.
That is coming up after this.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
66 degrees at 521. Here's what's happening on Wall Street. The opening bell rings this morning after stocks fell off a cliff yesterday, with all three major indexes closing in the red following a steep sell-off. Stocks trimmed some losses after the Dow Jones fell more than 900 points earlier in the session. The impending collapse of a major Chinese property developer rattled investors, along with the rise in Delta variant cases and the looming deadline on the U.S. debt ceiling. At the closing bell, the Dow Jones was down 614 points, the S&P 500 fell 75 points, and the NASDAQ lost 333 points. August housing starts and the second quarter budget deficit figures are due today. Housing industry analysts forecast a 2% increase in housing starts last month to an annual rate of 1.56 million. Economists expect to see the budget deficit narrowing to $192 billion in the April through June quarter. Both reports will be out at 8:30 this morning. And FedEx will hike its shipping rates next year. The company announced Monday prices will go up by an average of about 6%. FedEx said in a statement the changes reflect incremental costs associated with the challenging operating environment. It comes after the U.S. Postal Service announced a temporary price hike on many mail services during the holiday season to offset rising costs. Juliet?
Thank you very much. We've got a lot more news to get to today, and we're going to start off with, it's not just the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. worrying about the event turning into a super spreader. The New Yorkers themselves are expressing fear that 100 world leaders and their massive entourages are going to end up causing a massive spike in cases here in New York City because of this General Assembly. Yeah, there's going to be relatively little adherence to social distancing. I mean, these meetings are kind of important. A lot of them happen behind the scenes. You know, and locals say once the meetings are done, the delegates and their posses always head out into the city to dine and drink. Apparently, there's a cap on the size of these posses that they bring with them. But UN bosses say they are relying on an honor system. They're not asking for proof of vaccination or proof of negative COVID tests. Some New Yorkers say that is not okay with them.
Yeah, well, it's certainly going to be interesting to see if this indeed does turn into a super spreader event. To think that the UN, which deals with a lot of diseases, is responsible for this, is is really quite an irony.
Yeah.
Well, a newly released Wallet Hub study puts New York as the best state to be a teacher. Rounding out the top five were Utah, Washington, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. On the flip side, New Hampshire was ranked the worst place to be an educator. The District of Columbia, Maine, Arizona, and Montana filled out the bottom five, according to the study.
Well, there's another study that I have to tell you about. It's something that people are studying all over the paparazzi pictures of the UK because we have a royal alert. We have a new royal baby, Prince Andrew and his ex-wife, Sarah. Well, they didn't have the baby, but their daughter, Sarah Ferguson, Fergie, a.k.a. Their daughter, Beatrice, gave birth to a little bundle of joy Saturday, according to Buckingham Palace. They made the announcement yesterday. The 33-year-old Beatrice and her husband, Edo Mapazzi, are proud first-time parents to a little baby girl. I don't believe they have a name yet, or at least they haven't told us the name. That could have changed overnight, though. Yes, congratulations for your first-time little baby girl.
Protesters swarm Carmine's on the Upper West Side, urging diners to take their business elsewhere. Last night, demonstrators said the fight between a group of tourists and the restaurant's hostess was not over proof of coronavirus vaccination, but instead customers responding after the hostess allegedly used racial slurs. An attorney says his clients are vaccinated, saying Carmine's has used it as an excuse. The restaurant says the group came back out to convince the hostess to let their unvaccinated friends in before the exchange occurred. New surveillance footage shows another angle of the altercation, but the video has no audio, only showing who attacked first. Here's a little bit of audio from last night's protest.
You put money on their head. You put money on their head. Let me get my dollar back. You put money on their head. Get out of here. Get the out of here. We don't want you here. We don't want you here.
Needless to say, it was pretty heated, and one of the people that was front and center was Hawk Newsom from the Greater New York City Black Lives Matter chapter, who you actually interviewed on Sunday.
I did, and he says he is not an anti-vaxxer, but he does feel that Black people, young Black people in this city overwhelmingly have chosen not to get the vaccine. And he feels that this, these vaccine mandates are, unfair. And, it's a sort of a, almost kind of a racist, phenomenon. So, he has a whole different view of what happened at Carmine's that night. I mean, he says that he feels the owner of Carmine's held back video that showed that these women did initially have their vaccines, which they did. But I don't know. It's just kind of confusing because I don't think the video shows anything other than there were words between the hostess and the women and the men, and then it just got out of control. I'm just surprised because there had to have been a lot of witnesses around there, and we really haven't heard from anybody. Was it the hostess that was being aggressive? Was it the three women? Was it the three men that joined the three women? It's just still very unclear. Mm. So maybe we'll have some more information. But apparently three people have been charged in that assault. And those three people apparently are the women.
Mm. 527, somebody that never gets in fights with hostesses at restaurants, is our own Joe Nolan. Hello there, Joe. Good morning.
Not anymore since that time in South Orange. I try to stay away from it. Yeah. On the Van Wyck northbound College Point Boulevard, we got an accident in the process of being cleared as you travel northbound. Now, we have a problem inbound at the Lincoln Tunnel, apparently. There's some sort of police activity going on, and as a result, the inbound side is shut down. Both tubes are closed. So as you come inbound, you've got a 35, well, it says a 35-minute delay, but it's clearly more than that because nobody's moving. So bumper to bumper coming inbound at the Lincoln Tunnel this morning. You want to avoid it for now. Go down to the Holland Cup to the George Washington Bridge where, at least right now, there is no delay at all. If you're traveling, of course, over on the east side, don't forget the General Assembly. You want to avoid the entire area of the UN. Don't forget the frozen zones and the complete closures and alternate side-of-the-street parking rules and regulations. operations again today, are going to be suspended. This supportive service of UPSJobs.com is a UPS warehouse worker you can build a career to be proud of with a team that has your back. UPS is hiring starting up to $22 an hour. Apply at UPSJobs.com/shift. Make the shift. Make the difference. With traffic on the 7s, I'm Joe Nolan, Talk Radio 77, WABC.
Thank you very much. We have great news for travelers from outside the country if they want to travel to the United States. And I also am going to tell you places that you can travel that have very low incidence of COVID outside of the country I'm talking about. That's coming up in your Jet Set Julia travel update. We have On This Day coming up as well. But first, let's head over to the news desk for Deb's headlines. Good morning, Deb.
Morning, Juliet. And yes, the U.S. is easing its COVID-19 travel restrictions. As of November, travelers from the U.K., EU, and other nations will be allowed into the United States if they are fully vaccinated and undergo testing and contact tracing. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's party survived Monday's parliamentary elections. The NYPD investigating the death of a woman who was found inside of her Bronx apartment with a rubber band around her neck. The 35-year-old victim, identified by police as Belkis Lopez, found unconscious by responding officers at her East 158th Street apartment in the Melrose section. Police are reportedly investigating whether Lopez's on-again, off-again boyfriend caused her death. They are looking for him. And the NYPD has said it will send about 100 personnel to help with what officials are describing as a human rights crisis at the Rikers Island Jail complex. The NYPD will work as support staff and help court officers process inmates. The announcement comes after yet another inmate died at Rikers over the weekend, the 11th inmate to die at the jail complex so far this year. New Jersey playing home to approximately 500 evacuees from Afghanistan. Governor Phil Murphy said Monday Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst is serving as an arrival point. Well, a day after the Dow closed down 614 points, futures in the green this morning, Dow futures up right now 330 points. That's your 77-second WABC News update. Right now, 61 degrees under clear skies. Juliet will have your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. I'm Deborah Valentine.
Entertaining and informative. It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thank you, Felix, so much. It is Juliet, and Frank is with me as well. It is time for On This Day, September 21st, 46 BC. Julius Caesar celebrates the first of four triumphal processions into Rome, triumphed over Gaul, Egypt, Pontus, and Africa. And he actually brought the leader of the Gauls, Vercingetorix. He was led in chains. And there's a picture of him. You know, they're starting to get really good with these death mask, you know, recreation things and estimations as to what they really look like. And there's a really good picture here of him. It seems like it would be very realistic. This is what this Julius Caesar looked like.
On this day in 1837, Charles Tiffany founded a retail store of jewelry, china, and other fine accessories, now known as Tiffany's.
On this day, 1192, the English king, Richard I, Richard the Lionheart, was captured by Leopold V, the Duke of Austria. Richard had just gone, and he had done this whole tour, and he was just kicking butt, but he ends up getting arrested, and his mother had to come up with a lot of money, Eleanor of Aquitaine, to get him back.
On this day in 1917, the first film in Technicolor, The Gulf Between, premiered here in New York City.
And on this day, 1621, King James I of England gave Sir William Alexander a royal charter. And William Alexander was a Scottish courtier, and he was a poet. And he gave him this charter for Charles Fort, which was later Port Royal, Nova Scotia, in 1629, and then also Long Island, New York. Yes, he was one of the originals.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
On this day in 1936, The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien was published.
Oh, and this is so sad. On this day, 1776, Nathan Hale, a young man who volunteered to spy on the British for American rebels, was arrested. He was put to death later, but I think the next day. But he was just, he was so young, just a little boy, really. 21 or 22.
On this day in 1970, Monday Night Football debuted on ABC. Howard Cosell, Don Meredith, and Keith Jackson made up the show's first broadcast team.
Who was on the, who was on the team?
Howard, well,
oh, Cosell,
broadcast
yeah.
team, yeah.
No, I know.
Howard Cosell, Don Meredith, and Keith Jackson.
Oh, I didn't know the Keith Jackson part. 1780 on this day, Benedict Arnold gave British Major John Andre plans to West Point.
On this day in 1996, John F. Kennedy Jr. married Carolyn Bessette on an island off Georgia.
Oh. Oh. Videos of that. On this day, 1792, during the French Revolution, the National Convention passes a proclamation announcing the formal abolition of the French monarchy. Goodbye, Louis the 16th. Goodbye, Marie Antoinette.
On this day in 2004, a federal judge here in New York ordered Martha Stewart to surrender to prison on October 8th. The judge granted the request that was made a week earlier by the celebrity homemaker to begin serving her sentence for lying about a 2001 stock sale.
And in 1794, Jean-Paul Marat's remains are transferred to the Pantheon in Paris with the eulogy given by the Marquis de Sade. He was a revolutionary and a journalist.
All right. Well, that's about it on my list.
Hey, that's about it on my list, too.
All right.
So
that's what happened.
Actually, on this day, well, actually 1 month from this day, I'll be leaving for Italy.
Oh,
again.
Okay.
We'll do some more Jet Set Juliet stuff over
here. Twice within 1 year. That's, I mean, the commitment that you have to this Jet Set Juliet segment is extraordinary.
Well, listen, bud, you know, we don't have children, got married too late to have kids with my hubby. So the diapers, the money that we would spend on diapers and college tuition, we spend on traveling. And I work when I travel.
No, I think that's great. And we're still putting together, hopefully, a listener tour for our listeners to go to Italy with us, right?
That's the plan. That's what we want to do. So you guys have to start thinking about that. If that's something that you'd be interested in, maybe start emailing WABC and tell them. Because listen, I could take you on the tour of a lifetime over in Italy. I mean, you'll end up being best friends with half the country.
Wonderful.
Yes.
All right. Well, 5:36, we'll get to traffic and transit on the sevens in just a moment. President Biden is here in New York City for the annual fall meetings at the UN. You could bet that's going to be affecting the traffic you're about to hear. He's going to address the General Assembly today. The president is under tremendous scrutiny over the troop withdrawal in Afghanistan, including a U.S. drone strike that killed 10 people. Meantime, France is furious about the new U.S.-British partnership with Australia. The deal jeopardizes a lucrative defense contract between the countries.
Yeah, they're not happy about that at all. Supposedly, Macron and the president are going to be having a chat this week. I just wonder when that's going to happen. Let's head over to traffic on the sevens with Joe Nolan. Nobody's upset with Joe today.
No, not yet. Not yet, but I tell you what, though, you're heading inbound Lincoln Tunnel. We got ourselves a problem here. We're trying to figure out what it is. Port Authority is just saying police activity, but as you head inbound, both the center and south tubes are closed. That's heading inbound police activity, and it is all backed up now to the New Jersey Turnpike and growing by leaps and bounds very, very, very quickly. So right now, I would avoid the Lincoln Tunnel, go down to the Holland, go up to the George Washington Bridge. Again, the Lincoln Tunnel inbound is shut down with police activity. Northbound Van Wyck College Point Boulevard, that accident is still there. Full closures, frozen zones, not only the UN General Assembly, but the president's in town as well. And alternate side, once again today, is suspended. I'm Joe Nolan, traffic on the 7, Talk Radio 77, WABC.
538, 66 degrees. I'm Frank Moreno. This is the WABC Early News. Let's have a look at what's happening business-wise. Rough day for the stock market, in part because of concerns about the Delta variant, in part because of the impending collapse of a major Chinese property developer. So stocks were rattled yesterday, and investors were not at all pleased. At the closing bell, the Dow Jones was down 614 points, the S&P 500 fell 75 points, and the NASDAQ lost 330 points. Jeff Bezos is pledging $1 billion towards conservation efforts. Amazon's founder says that he will be giving away grants through the Bezos Earth Fund, which he started as part of his $10 billion overall commitment to fight climate change. The organization says the latest round of grants will be used to create, expand, manage, and monitor protected and conserved areas. Earlier this month, the fund said it would give away over $200 million by the end of the year after awarding nearly $800 million in grants in 2020. And it looks like a Hollywood union could be on the verge of a historic strike. The International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees is asking tens of thousands of workers to approve a strike authorization vote. Their contract expired less than 2 weeks ago, and talks have been underway for months, but there's still no agreement. Workers in the film and entertainment industry are pushing for better rest periods and fair pay on streaming productions. Juliet?
Thank you very much. It is time now for your Jet Set Juliet travel update. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jet Set Juliet. You know, Frank, I just have to say, I spent a good deal of time, you probably remember because you listened to at least one of the shows on Sunday, talking about this absurd travel ban that Joe Biden, President Biden, has kept in place for more than 550 days. We, as an America, haven't allowed foreign travelers to come here to visit since President Trump rightly closed the borders. Given the success of the vaccine, I thought President Biden would have lifted that ban, but he hadn't, and I was getting very fresh over the weekend on air about it. Perhaps somebody was listening. I don't know.
Well, he is in New York now, right?
I mean, I'd like to think my voice carries that kind of power, but I'm guessing it had more to do with the UN General Assembly meeting and previous dealings. But regardless of who gets the credit, thankfully, we finally got the great news. The U.S. will ease travel restrictions starting in November, which is okay. I mean, I don't know why they can't do it immediately, but whatever. I'd prefer it start tomorrow, but I'll take it now. So here's the deal. There's always a deal. Non-U.S. citizens coming in from other countries are allowed now, but only if they are vaccinated. The vaccination has to be, of course, one of those approved by our government. You know, this is the usual cast of characters. Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca. And children who aren't eligible for the vaccine are exempted. So our friends overseas can bring their kitties. Another catch, this applies to people coming in via commercial airline. It does not apply to travelers crossing land borders with Mexico and Canada. Moving on. So I'm thrilled. I mean, it's a huge relief for a lot of people. I hear a lot of you that are very interested in traveling overseas, but then you look at the COVID numbers in some of our favorite hotspots and you're like, nah, I'll pass. Well, here's something I prepared especially for you. I know a lot of you are older and you're vaccinated, but you don't like taking chances, and I respect that. And a lot of you are younger and you don't like taking chances, and I respect that. So here are places that you can travel headache-free because these are countries with minimal COVID rates. Starting with the only one that I've been to, actually, on the list, Slovakia. I stopped in Bratislava, which is on the Danube River, during that river cruise that I constantly talk about that I took with my mom back in 2016. I didn't really know much about the country, so I was pleasantly surprised when I got there. Bratislava is the capital. It's only an hour's drive from Vienna, Austria. It's pretty amazing. But you feel like you're definitely in a part of Europe that's still very much undiscovered, at least by tourists, at least by American tourists. It's got a fascinating history with old Gothic cathedrals and castles. I loved the gorgeous old town area with cobblestone streets, lots of bars and cafes surrounding this gorgeous main square, which is just medieval, and it's all lit up in tiny white lights at night. Again, it's the capital of Slovakia, so it's got quite modern sensibilities. And I really, really love Bratislava. Romania is actually on my bucket list, mainly because my husband and I became friends with some musicians who were playing on our honeymoon cruise, and they were all from Romania. And they told us a lot about it. It's a country built around superstition and folklore, and you really get a sense of that, especially if you take day trips outside the main cities to the castles, for instance. And the most famous castle, of course, is Bran Castle, home to the legendary vampire Dracula, Bram Stoker. But the castle is Bran. Bulgaria is also a safe bet. This is a place that mixes history. I mean, we're talking tombs from 300 BC that you could tour, to beaches on the Black Sea, to hilltop fortresses that were home to some of the great battles of the Middle Ages. So it mixes history with elegance, and it's a beautiful place. And, you know, again, not a lot of Americans make this their top 10 on the bucket list. And if you're thinking maybe a little closer to home is better for you, how about Dominica? This is a tiny little island in the Caribbean with an equally tiny number of COVID cases. They've only had a couple hundred. It's less touristy than other islands, which means you'll get a much more authentic experience. It's definitely more rugged, that, you know, compared to some of the other islands that are really geared for tourists, if that's your thing. I mean, it's mine. I definitely like that. This is a great spot for relaxing on the beach or hiking the lush outcroppings with the waterfalls and tubing and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's great for people who want adventure, authenticity, and definitely a little even closer, Bermuda. I love it because it's an Anglophile's dream. It's a British territory, so lots of British accents and British vibes. It can be a bit expensive, though. You're paying for the proximity. It's, I think, like a 2 hour or 2.5 hour flight from New York City. The island is awash in pastel, so it's very much an Instagrammer's dream, too. From the locals' shorts and, you know, what they wear, their little outfits, to the pretty little houses and even the restaurants and bars, everything is just pastel and white and pink and blues and limes, and it's just really cool. It's also got cool things like shipwreck diving and cliff jumping, and it's a haven for deep sea fishing. But again, bring your black card because Bermuda ain't cheap. And that is your Jet Set Juliet travel update for today.
All right. Thank you, Juliet.
You are very much welcome.
5:45, let's get a look at sports with Matt Sapienza.
Thanks, Frank. Here's what's going on in the wide world of sports. Gary Sanchez rebounded from poor defensive plays with a go-ahead home run. Four pitchers combined for a scoreless relief. And the Yankees gained in the AL wildcard race with a 4-3 victory over the Texas Rangers. The Sanchez put the Yankees ahead in the second inning against rookie A.J. Alexi with his 22nd home run. The Yankees built a 4-0 lead before the Rangers closed the gap in a 3-run fifth against Nestor Cortez. New York moved within half a game of Toronto for the second AL wildcard, and with 11 games left, is 2 back of Boston, the league wildcard leader. The Yankees had lost 15 of 22 following a 13-game winning streak. To Green Bay for some Monday Night Football action now. Aaron Jones caught 3 of Aaron Rodgers' 4 touchdown passes and rushed for a 4th score, and the Green Bay Packers had a welcome return to normal after an embarrassing opening week loss. The Packers beat the Detroit Lions 35-17. Green Bay won its 9th straight home opener. The Packers got thumped 38-3 by New Orleans in Week 1. Against Detroit, the Packers looked more like the team that went 13-3 in each of Coach Matt LaFleur's first 2 seasons. Rodgers went 22 of 27 for 255 yards and surpassed John Elway for the 10th all-time in passing yards. The Lions blew a 17-14 halftime lead and fell 0-2. With sports at 15 and 45, I'm Matt Sapienza. I'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thank you, Matt. All right.
Y'all come back now, here.
Y'all come back now, you hear?
Before we get to traffic and transit with Joe Nolan on the 7s, let me tell you a little bit about what's happening here in New York. The search is on for a man who allegedly made anti-Jewish threats in front of a synagogue in Brooklyn. The NYPD says it was Sunday afternoon when the suspect approached a 23-year-old man who was standing outside the synagogue on 12th Avenue. The individual is accused of stating, "Kill all the Jews," and threatening that he was going to blow up a synagogue. The victim was not hurt, but police have released footage of the bearded suspect, who's wearing sunglasses and a neon green T-shirt.
On that charming note, let's head over to Traffic on the 7s for some more charming news. So what do we know that's about this Lincoln Tunnel situation?
They reopened it. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, eventually, I'm sure during the day at some point we'll find out what exactly happened. But the Port Authority sometimes gets very closed mouth when it comes to things like this. So all lanes
were
closed.
Especially with all the diplomats.
Yeah, exactly. So all lanes are closed coming inbound Lincoln Tunnel, or were closed inbound the Lincoln Tunnel, actually for about 35, 40 minutes. So now you're backed all the way up to the turnpike. So that we would normally call about a 30 to 35 minute delay. So big delays inbound here early on at the Lincoln. It looks like the Holland starting to pick up a little bit of alternate routing. Not really jammed in, but certainly slow on both the extension and the Skyway coming inbound to the tube. Full closures, frozen zones, avoid the east side. I've been telling you that all week. Still have that accident northbound on the Van Wyck getting on up to the area of College Point Boulevard with that accident. And alternate side of the street parking rules again today are in effect. And this report of service of Indeed.com. Streamline your route to hired with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, screen, and interview candidates all in the same place. Find your next great hired at Indeed.com/credit. I'm Joe Nolan. Traffic on the 7s. Talk Radio 77. WABC.
Thank you very much. More heat on the former head of the Trump Organization and more salacious news from the literary world. This time in the bullseye, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. And Sid joins us to tell us what's coming on. Bernie and Sid.
It's the WABC Early News on 77 WABC. Now, here's Juliet Huddy and Frank Morano.
Thank you very much, Archie. The former head of the Trump Organization is expecting even more charges. Attorneys for CFO Alan Weisselberg say they expect more indictments to come down. You heard this at the top of the hour. The news is coming after tax documents were found in an alleged co-conspirator's basement. This is according to Alan Weisselberg's attorney, Brian Skarlatos. Weisselberg was, of course, the top guy at the former president's company. He has been charged in an alleged tax evasion scheme. He faces 15 state counts, including grand larceny, for allegedly enjoying a boatload of luxury perks, including an apartment, expensive cars, and private school tuition, among other things, for family members, in lieu of compensation.
And we're still keeping an eye on this case involving Gabby Petito. Here's the latest. The attorney for the family of a missing and presumed dead Florida woman's fiancé is canceling a news conference he'd planned for today. Steve Bertolino announced the cancellation after the FBI searched Brian Laundrie's family home in Northport, Florida yesterday, looking for anything in connection to 22-year-old Gabby Petito's disappearance. FBI officials said Sunday that a body found in a camping area that borders Wyoming's Grand Teton National Park is believed to be Petito's. An autopsy is scheduled for today. Laundrie hasn't been seen in days, and anyone with information about his whereabouts is asked to call the authorities.
Hopefully we will get information on this cat and where he is. In the meantime, let's bring in our cat, Sid, a.k.a. Sid Rosenberg, a.k.a. Sid, a.k.a. Hollywood.
Good old SR.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning,
how are
Sydney.
You? I have
good.
No idea where Brian Laundrie is. I would tell you. I would believe you. I would tell you. I have no idea. I've spoken to him in a very long time.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's halfway down the Mexican border.
I think he's dead, personally.
You know, it's
I
so
think
funny.
That mother effer killed himself.
I would not have thought that, but I had a bunch of callers this morning that all said the same
thing. Well, they're right.
He killed himself?
Yeah,
or,
of course
or
he did.
Is he on the lam?
No, he killed himself.
Oh, this guy's a coward. This guy's not the kill himself type.
Well, you know, cowards do that. The sociopaths don't, and psychopaths don't, because they don't have any remorse. He could be a coward and still have remorse
and know that
his life is basically over. So I don't encourage suicide, but in this case, wouldn't be a horrible thing.
You're convinced that he did it?
I am, yes, 1,000%. Now, I talk to people all the time, attorneys that are not, that feel like he dropped her off there. But the fact that people saw that van in the area where the body was found.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Come on. And they're fighting for days and they're both psychos. There's too much of that information.
Well, also the people that initially called in that domestic violence call to the Moab police, the Moab, whatever, their sheriffs or law enforcement, they said that they saw him slapping her.
Right. It was a big slap fight. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So. It's sad, it's tragic, but unfortunately, it's one of about a million of these stories, and the media kind of cherry picks which one they want to just you know, go nuts with. Mm. And when you go to NewYorkPost.com, for example, this morning, the first 9 stories are on this story.
Yeah.
It's too much. There's a million of these cases every day.
Well, you know, one of the things about that is because being in television news for so long, you would often get criticized for that. You know, why are you covering this story? A lot of times it has to do with the families themselves being very, very aggressive and constantly being, you know, dropping off pictures, dropping off information. I mean, for a lot of journalists, they're so busy covering a million stories, especially in local markets, that you know, if you've got the family giving you everything or friends giving you all the content that you need, that helps you put together a story. So that's oftentimes one of the impetus for covering somebody. But also, this girl was apparently an influencer and had 100,000 followers or something like that.
Yeah.
So that also can play into
right. And she's white and blonde and pretty. So yeah, I mean, again, what you just said is true, Juliet, 1,000% true. But an inner city black girl who's not as pretty as Gabby Petito goes missing and nobody cares and nobody
covers
it.
I disagree with you on that because I have been covering things before and it really, I mean, if you have a parent coming to you freaking out and showing the pictures and you know that this kid doesn't get into trouble and they're not usually the runaway type, then you do give coverage.
Not really. I mean, I watched Nancy Grace.
I've been in television. I'm telling you that's the case.
I know you did, but I watched television. I watched Nancy Grace for years and every story was Casey Anthony and the little blonde girl Meredith from Tulsa. And in that same week, 19 black little girls went missing and nobody cared. So I'm not saying all those things that you talked about don't go into play, aggressive parents and blah, blah, blah. But the media loves the white blonde chick over the little black girl who goes missing, which happens about 20 times a week.
But certainly the fact that she was documenting her whole trip and did have an online following does play a role.
Of course.
In
it
why
all
she's
does.
Getting,
but
all
I don't remember
attention.
The last. Give me the last big story of a black girl that went missing.
Well, also, there's.
Give me,
about,
the last, give me one.
There was about 700 indigenous young women that have gone missing in the same part of the country, and I couldn't name one.
You can't name one. Right.
What's coming up on the Bernie and Sid Show?
Well, we got a lot of good guests today. It's Tuesday. Bo Deedle's going to be here talking about detectives Juliet and Frank and guys solving cases. He certainly did his fair share of that. He'll join us coming up at 7:25 this morning. The guy that we are endorsing and hope to God he wins a gubernatorial in the state of New Jersey, Jack Cittarelli, Frank Morano's buddy. He's going to stop by at 7:40 this morning. And then we'll talk to Dr. Mark Siegel at 8:40 about the latest with COVID and all that stuff from Fox News. So you get Bo Deedle, Jack Cittarelli, and Mark Siegel.
For the record, I don't know Jack Cittarelli.
Not even a little bit.
No, I don't think I've ever met him.
Never met him.
I don't think so.
You don't even
know
I
like
was
him.
Just about to
no,
say,
I,
wow,
I like
he
him
wins.
Enough. I mean,
Juliet learns something new every day. Because,
yeah, exactly. I'm learning something.
Well, you guys are all best friends with everybody.
Yeah, and I make
everybody's your dear friend. Everybody's your best friend.
Right.
You know everybody.
Right, but
I'm
make
a
up,
loser.
I make up stuff
I
when
like
it comes
it.
To
play.
I make up a lot of stuff, but I know a lot of people. Whether they're my dear friends or not, Juliet, that remains a pretty good debate. But I know a lot of people.
No, but you can't help but become friends with you and become your buddy because you're just
Sid is surprisingly likable.
Well, today I'm going to make my way to the San Gennaro Festival and slam like 16 Zeppelins down my throat. I'm going to eat a lot today. I don't usually do that, but today I'm going to do that. And I'm looking forward to that. Well, how about that, Juliet?
Oh, that sounds so good.
I know, right?
Mm.
Il Cortile. Leslie Slender.
Il Cortile.
Yes, it's a nice restaurant, right?
Oh, yeah. I love greatest. These guys.
Yeah.
Il Cortile means, if I'm not mistaken, the knife in Italian.
Is that right?
I believe so.
Must be O.J. Simpson's favorite place.
Oh, that's very funny.
Well, I love you both. I'm going to go now and have a cup of coffee and talk to Bernie. And we'll get a great show for you from 6 to 10, just like you, Josh.
And let me correct, and this is why, you know, I'm American, not Italian. It does not mean the knife.
Of course not.
It means the courtyard.
Right, the courtyard.
Which makes more sense, because it looks like a courtyard.
Right. But people have been knifed in the courtyard, so.
No, not over there.
I don't say that.
But you were close. But you said it with such conviction.
I know.
Didn't you believe him, Juliet?
Yeah.
I did. Yeah, I was like, wait, Cortile. I didn't remember that. But.
Yeah, no.
Then I feel like I have to go back and refresh my Italian.
Well, aren't you going back to Italy, like, next month? Or something? Or?
Yeah, a month from today.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
And London in December.
Okay. Oh, my God.
The knife in Italian is Il Cortella.
Very close.
Okay, you can see how I made the mistake.
Very
okay.
close.
Il Cortella.
All righty.
Okay.